Entranced, Arthur turned it round yet again, and this time the light from the dusty little bedside lamp caught it at a different angle, and glittered on some fine abrasions on the fishbowl's surface. He held it up, adjusting the angle to the light, and suddenly saw clearly the finely engraved shapes of words shadowed on the glass. "So long," they said, "and thanks." And that was all. He blinked and understood nothing. For fully 5 more minutes he turned the object round and around, held it to the light at different angles, tapped it for its mesmerizing chime, and pondered on the meaning of the shadowy letters, but could find none. Finally he stood up, filled the bowl with water from the tap, and put it back on the table next to the television. He shook the little babelfish from his ear and dropped it, wriggling, into the bowl. He wouldn't be needing it any more, except for watching foreign movies. He returned to lie on his bed and turned out the light. He lay still and quiet. He absorbed the enveloping darkness, slowly relaxed his limbs from end to end, eased and regulated his breathing, gradually cleared his mind of all thought, closed his eyes, and was completely incapable of getting to sleep. The night was uneasy with rain. The rain clouds themselves had now moved on, and were currently concentrating their attention on a small transport cafe just outside Bournemouth. But the sky through which they had passed had been disturbed by them, and now wore a damply ruffled air, as if it didn't know what else it might not do if further provoked. The moon was out in a watery way. It looked like a ball of paper from the back pocket of jeans that have just come out from the washing machine, and which only time and ironing would tell if it was an old shopping list or a 5-pound note. The wind flicked about a little, like the tail of a horse that's trying to decide what sort of mood it's in tonight, and a bell somewhere chimed midnight. A skylight creaked open. It was stiff and had to be jiggled and persuaded a little, because the frame was slightly rotten, and the hinge had at some time in its life been rather sensibly painted over. But eventually it was open. A strut was found to prop it, and a figure struggled out into the narrow gully between the opposing pitches of the roof. It stood and watched the sky in silence. The figure was completely unrecognizable as the wild-looking creature who had burst crazily into the cottage a little over an hour ago. Gone was the ragged, threadbare dressing gown, smeared with the mud of 100 worlds, stained with junk food condiment from 100 grimy spaceports. Gone was the tangled mane of hair, gone the long and knotted beard, flourishing ecosystem and all. Instead, there was Arthur Dent, the smooth and casual, in corduroys and a chunky sweater. His hair was cropped and washed, his chin clean-shaven. Only the eyes still said that whatever it was the universe thought it was doing to him, he would still like it pleased to stop. They were not the same eyes with which he had last looked out at this particular scene, and the brain which interpreted the images the eyes resolved was not the same brain. There had been no surgery involved, just the continual wrenching of experience. The night seemed like an alive thing to him at this moment, the dark earth around him a being in which he was rooted. He could feel like a tingle on distant nerve ends, the flood of a far river, the roll of invisible hills, the knot of heavy rain clouds parked somewhere away to the south. He could sense, too, the thrill of being a tree, which was something he hadn't expected. He knew that it felt good to curl your toes in the earth, but he'd never realized it could feel quite as good as that. He could sense an almost unseemly wave of pleasure reaching out to him all the way from the New Forest. He must try the summer, he thought, and see what having leaves felt like. From another direction, he felt the sensation of being a sheep startled by a flying saucer, but it was virtually indistinguishable from the feeling of being a sheep startled by anything else it ever encountered, for they were creatures who learnt very little on their journey through life, and would be startled to see the sun rising in the morning, and astonished by all the green stuff in the field. He was surprised to find that he could feel the sheep being startled by the sun that morning, and the morning before, and being startled by a clump of trees the day before that. He could go further and further back, but it got dull because all it consisted of was sheep being startled by things they had been startled by the day before. He left the sheep and let his mind drift outwards sleepily in developing ripples. It felt the presence of other minds, hundreds of them, thousands in a web, some sleepy, some sleeping, some terribly excited, one fractured. One fractured. He passed it fleetingly and tried to feel for it again, but it eluded him like the other card with an apple on it in Pelmanism. He felt a spasm of excitement because he knew instinctively who it was, or at least knew who it was he wanted it to be, and once you know what it is you want to be true, instinct is a very useful device for enabling you to know that it is. He instinctively knew that it was Fenny, and that he wanted to find her. But he could not. By straining too much for it, he could feel he was losing the strange new faculty, so he relaxed the search and let his mind wander more easily once more. And again he felt the fracture. Again he couldn't find it. This time, whatever his instinct was busy telling him it was all right to believe, he wasn't certain that it was Fenny, or perhaps it was a different fracture this time. It had the same disjointed quality, but it seemed a more general feeling of fracture, deeper, not a single mind, maybe not a mind at all. It was different. He let his mind sink slowly and widely into the earth, rippling, seeping, sinking.